maybe the most important first step in writing a book is to be really, really clear on your purpose in writing the book. A lot of people, when you talk about people who are in real estate who want to write a book, a lot of people want to write a book. Their purpose is to create a business, basically a business card that will bring more business. You see a lot of consultants and speakers who like to put a book out and they'll give the book away. What they want the book to do is they want it to be an interesting read and to bring new clients into their business.
Welcome to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate Show. Whether you are an active or passive investor, we'll teach you how to scale your real estate investing business into something big.
John David Mann started out as a concert cellist and composer. At 17, he started his own high school where he also went on to teach. He pinballed through careers in holistic health, publishing, and sales leadership before becoming a full-time writer. He has co-authored 30 books, including the best-selling classic, The Go-Giver, with Bob Berg, and a handful of New York Times and national bestsellers. His first novel, Steel Fear, co-authored with former Navy SEAL Brandon Webb, was released this July. Author Lee Child of Jack Reacher fame called it an instant classic, maybe an instant legend. David, that's the one name I wasn't supposed to call you. Hey, we'll just butcher out of the gate. John, welcome to the show.
Happens all the time. It's great to be here. Thank you, Sam.
Well, you know, I'll blame it on your laptop in the morgue, as you called it, because usually I cheat a little bit running a daily show and I use the name in the lower left-hand corner of the guests.
Oh, yeah. It's my wife.
Yeah, it says Anna Mann. So I can't quite call you Anna. That just doesn't work.
You can do it if you want. It's okay. I don't care.
Probably been called worse. Absolutely. Hey, I appreciate you coming on the show. I think today's going to be an exciting episode because it's not every day I get one to get, you know, a famous author to come on because there's so many things we want to talk about, right? You've written across a variety of spectrums. Let's start there. I mean, you just finished Steel Fear. Talk to us about that book, and then I want to hear a little bit about The Go-Giver and the differences between those two writing styles, why you chose. The floor is yours.
Well, actually, to be honest, I just finished the sequel to Steel Fear, but that won't be out until next year, so I just sent that into my editor last week. Yeah, I mean, you read the intro, but I wasn't kidding when I said I pinballed through this and that career through the first few decades of my adult life. I never had this moment where I sat down and said, I am going to do this. Things kind of happened. I pursued my interests. I followed leads. My nose led me in new directions and I got in trouble. And, you know, I just keep redefining myself, reinventing myself. So I've also continued pinballing in the lane of writer, as you're pointing out. So yeah, it's a variety of genres and it's a little dizzying. It's a little confusing, unless you have a scorecard keeping track. So yeah, The Go-Giver was really my entree into the life of a professional author. My plan at the time, and you know what they say about plans, man plans, God laughs, right? My plan at the time was to become a screenwriter, actually. I had been in sales. I had been in direct sales. I had a huge sales organization, and that was winding down. The sun was setting. I just knew on that career for me, I really wanted to write, but I was going to become a screenwriter. I went out to Hollywood. I took screenwriting courses. I had a mentor. I was just so jazzed about, you know, that was it, man. A-list Hollywood screener, that was my goal. And Bob Berg came along and ruined my career. Bob pulled the lever on that pinball machine and soon I was dun, 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 dun. I knew Bob, dear friend. I'd edited some of his stuff and he approached me and said, listen, I got this idea for a book, but it's not the kind of book I know how to write. It's not what I do. I'm a how-to guy. Bob has been like a sales trainer for a century and he's phenomenal at what he does. But he said, this is like a story. It's called The Go-Giver. You know, it's a play on the go-getter. And I said, yeah, I get the concept. And he said, I don't know how to write this. I need you to write it with me. And I was like, man, I'm busy. And I was having an opportunity, although I didn't know it at the time, to learn one of the great lessons of my life, which is that all of the greatest things that have ever happened to me have not been as a result of my plan. They've all been accidental or out of left field or even interruptions in what I thought I was doing. Maybe 2-3 months later, I had a little free space and I sat down and kind of played with the chapter and I shipped it off to Bob, emailed it off to Bob, said, what do you think about this? He said, what do I think? It's fantastic. Keep going. And so I would pen a chapter and I would shoot it to Bob and he would shoot back ideas. And in 6 weeks, we had a book.
Wow.
And it sounds like everything was made in the shade. It was not. We had an agent. I got an agent who submitted the book to New York and it was rejected over a dozen times, rejected like 16 times.
Wow.
And they were right to reject it. I talk about this in the book, you know, How to Write Good. They were right because if one of them had published the book, you would never have heard of it because it wasn't very good. It just wasn't. It wasn't ready. But we took it back and spent a year rewriting it. That was when I really began to learn how to write gooder, how to take writing that has the germ of something in it, but that's really not in great shape, and how to rewrite it and revise it and pull its best out of it and put its best foot forward. And then we took it back to New York. It sold, and it has sold over 1 million copies. So clearly it has worked. That's where I got into the authorship world. And, you know, all of my writing at first was in the sphere that I knew, Sam, which was sales leadership, business leadership, personal development, and it was all nonfiction. And I then had some opportunities to write some memoirs, memoir of a CEO of one company, a Fortune 500 CEO, memoir of a political operative, memoir of a sales field leader. These are all great learning experiences. It was like being an actor and playing different roles. It was like being Meryl Streep and getting to do, you know, Sophie's Choice, but Lieutenant's Woman, and, you know, and whatever, these all different roles. But one of the earliest memoirs that I wrote, of course, The Go-Giver, it says, the subtitle is A Little Story About a Powerful Business Idea. Well, yeah, I mean, it's kind of a Trojan horse. I mean, yeah, it's a business idea, but it's also a life idea. So, you know, we put the book out in the business lane. Our publisher, Portfolio, is a business imprint. And they put out a ton of Seth Godin's books. You know, they're a phenomenal business publisher. So that was our lane. But very quickly, we started getting feedback from people, you know, from church leaders, marriage counselors, people in all walks of life saying, we're using this book. There's a guy who said, I just used the book with my senior class in high school. It was in 2009, and he's done it with every senior class since.
Wow.
He has his class go through The Go-Giver. We had teachers from graduate school to middle school using it. So it kind of seeped out into not just the business world, but the world. And it's just been, we have a couple of sequels, obviously, The Go-Giver Leader, The Go-Giver Influencer. And then my wife and I just wrote The Go-Giver Marriage, which is going to come out next spring, actually. Isn't even out yet. I mean, it's on Amazon. You can see it. You can pre-order it, but it's not going to come out until March. And that was a blast to write for the two of us.
A blast to write?
Yeah. Well, my wife has watched every book I've written. She's my first reader. She's one of my best critics. She loves the stuff I do. She loves me, but she's also a really good critical reader. Mm-hmm. So she gives me great feedback. I call her my first reader, but we've never written together before.
Right.
And so that was really, frankly, to be honest, we didn't know how that was going to be. I didn't know what it was going to be like.
So is there a little comedy there? It's a Go-Giver marriage book.
Yeah, yeah.
Hey, I wonder how this is going to work out writing with my spouse.
What is wrong with you? I'll take credit for that. Yeah. Yeah. We'd never done it before. You know, we have a wonderful friendship. And so, you know, we had every expectation it'd be cool, but we didn't know how much writing would she do? How much writing would I do? How would that work together? You know, it worked beautifully. And we're really happy with the book. And we're, you know, it's the first of, I don't know if we'll do more together, but it was a blast. We're excited about that.
That's awesome. I love the journey there. You know, going back maybe 7 or 8 minutes here in the conversation where you said something to the effect of every good thing that, and I'm paraphrasing, but it's happened in your life wasn't as a direct result of something you planned and said, hey, I'm going to go do this.
Right.
A leading question here. But were there things that positioned you to take advantage of those opportunities when they came?
Yeah. I mean, I do think that, you know, the old cliche about preparedness meeting, it's preparedness, luck, that's it. Luck is preparedness meeting opportunity.
Right.
That's the expression. Yeah. I mean, I think that, you know, part of what I've been learning in my career is when to say, I don't think so, but maybe I'm wrong. I don't think that's for me, but, you know, I need to listen. That's what I do with Bob. Honestly, I told my wife, then, you know, my fiance, I told her, it's Go-Giver. I don't get it. I get the concept, but I don't see this. I just didn't see it.
Right.
But it's Bob. I got to give it a listen, you know, and we visited him. And my agent, a year after the Go-Giver came out, my agent came to me and said, I got this guy in my office. It's not the kind of book you do. He's a Navy SEAL sniper. He wants to write a memoir. You interested? I was like, there's no way I'm not doing that book. It was so far out of my sphere and my experience set. I have not been in the military. You know, I am not a gun enthusiast, a totally foreign world to me.
Right.
But I said, this sounds fascinating. I got to be a part of this. And Brandon and I started collaborating, communicating, and we clicked like that. And we've done 7 books now together. And Steel Fear, the novel, is our 7th book together. And Cold Fear, the sequel, will be our 8th. So that was out of left field. Never saw that coming. I am having a blast doing it. It's just a ball.
That's fantastic. And for those of you who are wondering if this is your genre, I just finished Steel Fear. I read that, I think it's 2 or 3 days. And I told John here before we started recording this that I go to bed pretty early. 7:30 is my usual bedtime, 7:30 or 8. And 2 of those nights, I think I found myself up 11 o'clock at night still reading, going, oh my gosh, this is an amazing book.
I deeply, deeply apologize. I am so sorry. You're not the first person. I said this to you before. I'm not the first person whose nights I've ruined. But yeah, I appreciate that.
it was a gripping. I mean, a gripping book. You're just like on the edge of your seat the whole time reading it. So it's like, man, it's so well done. You know, just again, switching, you know, from personal life coaching. I mean, that's a skill set. That's a real skill set. What have been some of the things that have helped you along that path to go, okay, I can write this way, and now I'm going to just completely change my frame of reference, and now I'm going to write about this?
Yeah. Well, I mean, first of all, I do follow my passions. And The Go-Giver was in a sphere that I had been part of, that I had plunged into the deep end of the pool. That whole sort of business idea of, you know, what are the principles that make somebody a truly outstanding business leader? What are some of the central modes of behavior, kind of the core personal rules, if you might say, that make somebody a person of extraordinary influence? This fascinated me. And so The Go-Giver, it wasn't a foreign thing. The military thing was totally foreign to me, but I developed a profound love of crime novels, detective novels and mysteries. And so for years, I was writing nonfiction and I was reading all this fiction. So it became a really passion of mine. So the first thing is I have an interest. I'm in love with the idea of it. But the second thing of it is, I really love to sort of take something apart and figure out what works and what doesn't. I try to read the best I can in whatever sphere I'm in. So with mysteries, crime novels, I read the best, you know, from Raymond Chandler to Lee Child to everything in between. Dennis Lehane, Kate Atkinson, lowbrow, highbrow, but always the best, the best, the best, the best, the best. Come away from that and I'm going, what makes it work so well? What keeps the reader gripped? What makes that character so interesting? What makes me feel for that character so strongly? What makes that book feel like when I close the cover and put it down, something in my life has changed? Like it wasn't just entertainment. Like I'm a different person because I read that book. So I love kind of figuring these things out, taking them apart and learning what works and what doesn't work. And I think that the biggest influence in my writing career has been listening carefully to the critique I get.
That's got to be a skill that, I mean, that's translatable across, I mean, every walk of life.
Yeah. Yes. That's right. I really agree with that. And I think it's a critical skill for success in the adult world. It's something that a 3-year-old does not possess.
Right.
It's something that an 8-year-old begins to confront. It's something that a 14-year-old vehemently rejects, but possibly on some level is beginning to embrace. And it's hopefully somebody, you know, something that when I was 20, I rejected vehemently as much as any 14-year-old. You know, I look back at myself as a 21-year-old. I was completely not open to anyone suggesting that I do anything differently than the way I was doing it. I think I can say that pretty honestly. And I think one of the hardest lessons of my life path, but I think also probably the most valuable, has been to learn how to embrace it when either people whose opinions I have reason to value, not just anybody, right? But people whose opinions have value, or sometimes circumstances, come and give me a little slap in the face and say, yo, this is really, really good. This over here, not so good. You could do that better. In fact, you could do that a lot better, but you would need to do it differently. Mm. You open to hearing what I have to suggest? Like, yeah, I'm open to hearing it. No, I'll tell you what, Sam, it still happens to me. You know, every book I write, I've written it to the point where I'm ready to hand a draft over. And I feel like it's the best it could possibly be. Mm. And then my editor will come back and say, yeah, these things right here don't work. And I'm like, nope, you're wrong. You're wrong. I mean, emotionally, I have that. I feel that in me. Intellectually, I know that. I know she's right. I know I have to listen. I can't see it myself. But if I listen, I will reach the point where I see what she's saying. Not only that, but I agree with what she's saying. Not only that, but I'm glad about what she's saying because she's showing me how to make it better. And it applies to, as you say, life. She's showing me how to make myself better, my life better, My wife shows me how to become a better person every day. It's one of the reasons I am so frantically and crazily in love with her. She has made me into such a better person than I was when she found me.
That's awesome. There's so much power in that. One, having the humility. Because like you said, there's two parts going on there. There's the emotional response of, well, you're dead wrong. And there's the intellectual response of,
yeah, what do you know?
Yeah, right. What do you know? You didn't spend 1,000 hours writing this.
That's right. That's right.
Jump off a cliff.
Who died and made you buzz?
Right. But then there's intellectual, you know, side of that that says, hey, wait, I should probably pay attention, you know, because this could be better. And marrying those two and going, okay, how do I get these two to work, and having the willpower and the courage? I think that's it. The courage to listen.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're right. I think there's a humility to it. There's a courage to it. And I'll add a third element, which there's a faith to it. And the faith is faith in the outcome, in the higher outcome, in the better outcome. And, you know, I think when I was 21, I don't know how much of that I had. I had what felt like a ton of confidence. And I think a lot of that was bluster and like kind of fake it till you make it confidence.
Right.
Maybe it was real confidence, but, you know, but foolishly based. But yeah, one of the things that having published over 30 books, one of the things that does give me is it gives me a higher level of faith that this book will probably turn out okay because I've done it before and it's worked out. But first off, I've had some books that did really well, and I've had some books that went over like a lead balloon that I still think they're, I'm very proud of them. Like I'm proud of all my kids, but you know, some of those books, you know, in terms of the marketplace didn't agree. It's like nobody bought them. A few people bought them and loved them, but then nobody else did. And there's a reason. So I have faith in the outcome, but it's always accompanied by the emotional side. Yeah, I don't know if I know what I'm doing.
And I don't know there's ever a way to get rid of that.
I hope not.
Yeah.
Yeah, I hope not. I think that if you don't have some level of self-doubt, then you're either in the wrong business or you're in the wrong universe.
Right. Or you're not risking enough.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the other alternative. I want to switch gears here a little bit, if you don't mind. I mean, you've given us some awesome just insight into the writing process, into, you know, the styles of things that you write, some, you know, just the things that writers go through, which I mean, a lot of what you've talked about, I've never considered. In real estate, a lot of us want to write a book and really don't even know where to start or know, you know, that sounds like the most daunting task in the world to me. It would be 20, whatever the next millennium is before I'd get a book written. You have an ebook on your website. It's called How to Write Good, or at least Gooder, which I think is a hilarious title. But, you know, talk to us about the writing process. Talk to us just about what are some maybe practical things that someone can do to really begin their writing process.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, one reason the book is called How to Write Good and not How to Write Great is that, you know, part of my position is I want to start where we are, start where you are. And that's where I have to start every day. Start where I am. And, you know, you can't set out to write a great book because, you know, you're kind of jinxing yourself. You set out to do a good job. That's what you do. You set out to do a good job. And, you know, I don't have any pretension or aspiration to make it great. Who knows what great is? They'll judge that 100 years from now.
Right.
But I can improve it by 10%. And then I can improve it again tomorrow, making it gooder. You know, implicit in that title is start where you are. You know, so part of that is there's kind of two aspects to writing a book. There's just writing and you're not yet writing a book. Like I did a lot of things before I wrote books that were writing, but in small form, small editorials, like little columns in a business journal, a number of different business journals. My blog posts, I had a blog and I would do posts that would be like little mini essays, some of them better than others, some of them worse than others. Newsletters. I wrote newsletters to my sales group. So I had 100,000 people in my sales group, but I had about 1,000 who were like leadership, you know?
Wow.
And I would write a newsletter just for them. And it was, you know, me writing about business. It was how-to stuff, but it was practice. I always encourage people who want to improve their writing, refine their writing, develop their writing, to find good short form writing. Here are the key ingredients of that. Blog posts are great. Twitter is really short form. I hope they, something a little bit bigger than that would be ideal.
Right.
But, you know, 300 words, 400 words, 800 words, a page or two, short form. You're taking an idea and you're completing the idea. You know, you're taking one idea. Maybe there's a story or two that illustrated, or a single story that illustrates it. There's a principle you want to get across, or there's a technique you want to get across. So you're taking one idea and giving it a treatment. One of the requirements here is that you finish it. First off, that you start it, but that you finish it, bring it to a point of completion, and then you share it, that it has to be published. You have to write something, complete it, and publish it. And publish it could be it goes to your group of six people. It could be you put it on your blog and nobody reads your blog but your mom. That's okay. The act of sharing it. I just had something happen with an old friend who is writing a book, first book, memoir, and is looking for an agent. And she said, I got a proposal already. I said, well, send me your proposal. And I knew exactly what she would say. This is what people always say. You say, oh, you show it to you? Well, you want to publish it for the world, right? Suddenly you're going to show it to me. It's like, yeah, exactly. It's like that. It's like that for everyone. You mean people are going to read this? Yeah, they are. So if you write a 300-word piece and publish it so that five people read it, guess what? You're an author. Now do it again. Do another one. Do another one. Will it be your best writing? No, it will not. And it can't be. By definition, it's like baby's first steps. You're going to fall down. That's okay. So I recommend getting lots of sort of practice. See what it feels like. By the way, when you do that 300-word piece or 500-word piece, I recommend that you write it. And before you publish it, put it aside for whatever period of time it takes to gain some emotional distance. And that could be literally a few hours, like you might write it in the morning and come back to it in the end of the afternoon. It could be 24 hours. That's some distance. For me, sometimes I have to put it down for a week, come back to a blog post like a week later. But you want to come back to it when you have some emotional distance, because there are two different mindsets in writing. The first is the mindset of creating it. And that's when you just take your idea and just go. In this mindset, you really can't have any clear idea whether this is any good or not. You'll try to. As you're writing, you'll say, oh, this is terrible. Turn that voice off. Put the mute button on that. This is not the self-evaluating voice. This is the creating voice. Then there's another mindset, another mental faculty, which is objectively evaluating. I literally have two different places in my room where I do this. I have a desk where I'm sitting right now. You can't see it because of the steel fear screen. And over there in the corner, I have a comfy overstuffed chair where I sit and I write stuff in the mornings with a pad of paper. No computer, just a pad of paper and a pen. I write over there. I evaluate it over here. Two different people, writer, editor. And so if you write your 300 words, write it, put it away, get some emotional distance. Then come back to it and be honest and say, okay, know that there's something good in here and know that there'll be some crap in here, and be willing to sift away the crap, improve the sentences, shorten the paragraphs, clarify what you mean, just make it. It's kind of like you got a radio station, you got to turn the dial to kind of get the signal in clearer. And then once you've done that to the best you can for now, then you publish. Now, all this is previous to writing a book. Then in terms of, I'm giving you, this is like all rehearsed how to. I'm just making this up as I go. The book part, I think one of the, maybe the most important first step in writing a book is to be really, really clear on your purpose in writing the book. A lot of people, when you talk about people who are in real estate who want to write a book, a lot of people want to write a book. Their purpose is to create a business, basically a business card that will bring more business. You see a lot of consultants and speakers who like to put a book out and they'll give the book away. What they want the book to do is they want it to be an interesting read and to bring new clients into their business. This is a completely legitimate reason to write a book. It's not the reason I write a book. It's a different reason, but that's fine. Your purpose isn't to flood the marketplace and create a bestseller and be in the New York Times bestseller list. It's to appeal to potential clients. It's to describe your business and what you do really, or describe your life and who you are in such a way people would say, huh, this is just so fascinating. I like what this guy says. Maybe we can do business together. That's kind of your purpose. That's awesome. Some people want to write a book because they've had interesting experiences in their lives and they want to share them with their family, their friends. They want to leave a legacy. My wife and I, a childhood friend of hers, wanted to write a book about his running career. A year ago, he approached her and said, can you help me with this? And we helped him with it. And he wrote this book. You know, he'll probably never sell a million copies of it. He wanted to write it for the people that know him and his family. And he sold a couple thousand copies, which is really, really amazing and awesome. Good for him. It's fantastic. But you know, you want to know for certain what your purpose is in writing the book, what your expectations are.
Yeah, those are very practical steps. I love the two different minds you talked about there, the creative voice and the objective voice. Determine purpose. I think that'll set the framework for how to get in that groove and then go forward. Because like that's it for, you know, I'm not the most creative soul in the world, especially those of us who are very linear in like go do, acquire, take down assets. We're, you know, buying apartment complexes, stuff like that. And the last thing we want to do is sit down and you know, type some stuff out. It's like, man, this is hard for us.
Yes, it is. It is hard. At the same time, you're a guy to stay up to 11 o'clock reading story about a disgraced Navy SEAL and a serial killer. So, I mean, there's something in you that like really resonates with story and a mystery. And, you know, you hear great speakers on the stage. What do? They tell a great story. They have a punchline. So there's a mystery. It's like, where is he going with this? Then he lets you know where he's going. And you go, whoa, I didn't see that coming. But of course he was going to say that.
Sure.
It's kind of like the guy is a mystery novel in a 15-minute talk on the stage. I guess what I'm saying is there's elements of story, of a great story, in even in nonfiction writing. And if you're writing a book about real estate, if you're writing a book about investing, there's still elements of story. Like one thing I really admire, I have nonfiction heroes, although most of what I read is fiction. Nonfiction heroes like Malcolm Gladwell. Mm. Can this guy tell a story? Oh, my God. I mean, you read his books and you just, it's almost like you got to stay up till 11 o'clock to read his book, right? Because it's just so gripping. It's not a story. It's not a novel. It's not a mystery. It's nonfiction, but it feels like it because the guy's a real storyteller. So I think every book, if you think of it from the point of view of what's the story I'm telling, every story has kind of a beginning, middle, and end. It has a hero. The hero might be the reader. The hero might be the author. In Gladwell's case, sometimes the hero is an idea, but every book has a story to tell, or it should.
Right.
There are a lot of books that don't, but they're boring.
Right. There are books that don't, they're boring and they don't go anywhere. So that's fantastic. John Mann, I have really enjoyed this interview today. Thank you for taking the time out of, I'm sure, what is a very busy schedule for you to just discuss so many facets of your life, of writing, of the different styles of things that you write. Yeah, this has been a lot of fun for me. So thank you for that.
I got to say, I have been delighted. You're a fantastic host. I appreciate it. And again, I apologize so deeply for ruining your sleep.
Right. Absolutely. Before we sign off here, is there anything else, you know, that you want to leave with our listeners that, you know, you think might appeal to them, or kind of some deep, deep piece of advice that you would leave with them that you think is valuable?
I don't know how deep this is, honestly. And I do think that to a great extent, maybe to 100% extent, there's no such thing as a solo enterprise. My kind of writing is a very solitary life. On the face of it, it doesn't require anything but me, pad of paper, and my chair. But that's an illusion. It's not true, because there are things I can't do. For a book to get from me to you, there have to be other people who know what they're doing that I don't know how to do. There has to be my editor. There has to be my co-author, Brandon. I mean, I did the lion's share of the actual putting the words together, of the making up of the story. But without Brandon, there'd be no Steel Fear. The same thing is true with Go Giver. Without Bob Berg, there's no Go Giver. My point in this is, I have a facility for writing. It's something that just comes naturally to me. There are other things that don't come naturally to me. Marketing is one of those things. It doesn't come naturally to me. I'm not great at it. Design, I can kind of do it, but it's not my native skill. Each one of us, I believe, has a gift, certainly in skill sets to give the world. So just know where your strengths are. Know where they aren't. Yeah, that's what partnership and teamwork is for. I think partnership is so central, so pivotal. And if there is a single secret to my so far success in my writing career, it's been working with people, knowing how to work with other people.
That's awesome. Well said. If our listeners want to get in touch with you, your books, or anything on that front, what is the best place to do that?
Well, Steel Fear has its own website, which is steelfear.com. But in a larger sense, my website is, all my books are on my website. My blog is on my website. If you ever want to contact me, hit the contact button. It goes to me. There is no staff it goes to but me. And that my site is just my name, johndavidmann.com.
And that's M-A-N-N for those of you who are listening. John David Mann, M-A-N-N. John, thank you for your time today. This was fantastic. I do appreciate it.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Hey, thanks for listening to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate podcast. If you can do me a favor and subscribe and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, whatever platform it is you use to listen, if you can do that for us, that would be a fantastic help to the show. It helps us both attract new listeners as well as rank higher on those directories. So appreciate you listening. Thanks so much, and hope to catch you on the next episode.